Now, as I mentioned at the start, you both have your own projects that you're pursuing. Jim, you're looking at work with the Fulton Street Cemetery, and Christopher, you with Monument Park and Monroe Center and Veterans Memorial Park at Fulton. Can you each tell me about what you got going on with these projects?
Yeah, with the Fulton Street Cemetery, I was actually... someone came up to me from the Midtown Neighborhood Association and was interested in what I knew about Grand Rapids history and how I might contribute to actually building a web page.
Okay.
And it kind of came out from there that, you know, first we're going to start doing all this research, and basically we're starting with prominent people.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone through and identified all the mayors, all the early mayors that are there,
mm-hmm.
and going through their histories, building their histories, building a database.
Okay.
And eventually we'll have a searchable database and everything, and we're looking to have walking tours. And
okay. And when would the database be available for people to check out?
Hopefully at the end of the year.
Okay. It's a work in progress.
It's definitely a work in progress.
And the walking tours would be of the cemetery or?
Of the cemetery and a lot of this information.
Okay.
Hopefully
we're going
to work with a bunch of, yeah.
So the Fulton Street Cemetery is where the majority of these prominent people are resting now?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And once this project is done, then we'll move on to another prominent cemetery that has a lot of other.
Okay. Oh, that's awesome. And how about yourself, Chris, your projects?
I'm the co-chair of the committee that's redesigning the parks. And essentially, we've got an opportunity with some various funding sources to really make an investment in the parks that we haven't been able to for the last 50 years, probably. And we're hoping that the investment will last a good 50, 75 years.
Mm-hmm.
But the... The idea with Monument Park is to move the monument to the Civil War monument to a place of prominence, and then make the space more attractive and a little bit more functional.
Now, that's the monument that you see by the police station or
mm-hmm.
across
yep.
the street. Okay, so mm-hmm. so that would be relocating then?
Well, the current plan is to move it within the park, so it's really looking out over the intersection of Division and Fulton.
Okay.
Right there.
Okay.
So it would kind of look over towards the UICA. And,
so when you say the park, you mean Veterans Park?
Monument Park.
Okay.
So Monument Park and, you know, the other things that are going on there, 616 is being renovated, and really the sidewalk surface in front of there was left over from the 1980s
okay.
Mineral Mall
right.
era, and so it's in rough condition.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just a lot of reasons to address it right now and to really make it a, attractive public park that also, you know, protects and honors the history of the monument.
Okay.
So that's been really fun. And that, we did a site survey and went through all the history and changes in that park. And, you know, that's actually pretty fascinating stuff. But then with Veterans Memorial Park, it's a more solemn park. It's, dedicated to our monuments
mm-hmm.
Of the fallen soldiers in Kent County throughout mm-hmm. our wars. And there the idea would be to, essentially rebuild the fountain, replace the materials around it,
mm-hmm.
move... The World War One monument will stay in place, and World War Two Korea monument, which is right in front, will be moved a little bit further away to give it its own space and prominence.
Mm-hmm.
And then the later monuments, Vietnam and the Iraqi Freedom Monument, will be moved to sort of a oval walk that'll surround the inner
okay.
space. And the idea there is that that'll sort of form like a sacred core.
Okay. You know,
so when you're in that space, it's a solemn space. It's a place to reflect.
Okay.
And it also gives a space, unfortunately, you know, there's a chance over the next 100 years that we'll need to add additional monuments. And it'll give us room to
okay.
place them over time. And
okay.
Hopefully that won't be anytime soon.
Okay. People are always interested in, you know, the history of the Calder and any... You know, things you guys can share behind that and how the Calder came to be?
Well, it was It was the first of the National Endowments for the Arts. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, the first outdoor sculpture that was funded by the NEA. They had chosen Alexander Calder in 1967. Mm. They commissioned him, and he built that was actually built over in Tours, France, and then brought over.
Okay.
And then reassembled. And basically it was dedicated, I believe it was the same week that was the kickoff to the Arts Festival.
Yeah, I think that those coincided.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's always been sort of the icon of the festival.
Yeah, very much so, and definitely an icon of the city. You know, it's always been very prominent to our city as long as I can remember, as long as I've been here, actually. Yeah.
There was a lot of controversy around it at the time.
Yes,
some people
there was.
Really hated it. And while it was being dedicated, if I remember the story correctly, the woman who was really instrumental in bringing it here had a brick thrown through her picture window.
I'd heard the story about that a couple of weeks ago. A friend was mentioning that. I didn't know any other details, but, I mean, I can't think of why it would upset somebody. I mean, the Calder doesn't seem to be offensive in any way, shape, or form, I mean, as far as I can tell.
Well, I think at the time it was, you know, it was a leading edge piece of art. So, you know, I think once you've been around something for a long time,
right,
and you're accustomed to it.
But the mood of the city obviously was probably a bit different then.
I'm sure, yeah.
Which perhaps, you know, led to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other interesting Calder down there is the one painted on top of the county building.
Yes, nice. Yes. And a lot of people don't think about that until they're up in, say, the University Club looking down and they see that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you're absolutely right. That does get often overlooked. Now, I mean, talking about buildings, I mean, every few years we'll see buildings being renovated and restored to their current glory. Right now, if you go down Fulton, you'll see the Wimcat building, which used to be Jacobson's, and I believe White and White being restored. What are some of the downtown buildings that each of you connect with that you'd like to kind of maybe share some of the backstory and history on?
I think one of my favorites is the McKay Tower. It's you know, it's just a beautiful example of a skyscraper of that era, but it was initially just the first four stories.
Correct.
It was built as a bank building, and it's really interesting if you encounter a picture or a postcard from that era, because when you think of that, you know, space, now mm-hmm. you think of it with the really prominent building, mm-hmm. but it was much, you know, the much more modest building really kind of changes the feel of the space, even in photographs.
Right, but then it became our first skyscraper.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the interesting thing with that, too, is right around that time period with my studies, my research, I've noticed that they were trying to break that, you know, 10-story skyscraper limit mm-hmm. early teens. And my guess is that they must have planned for that with that building, because why else would you use, you know, the steel I-beams in a four-story building?
I mean, okay.
That was already laid down.
So they're already looking ahead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I looked into the construction of that thing, mm-hmm. and they were able to actually connect into the original.
Well, that was really smart of them.
Yeah.
Any other buildings for you, Jim, that you really connect with down there?
Well, it's no longer the Select Bank building, but it was originally the Grand Rapids Savings building.
Yeah.
And
great architecture on the inside of there.
That was actually, that was probably like our second skyscraper.
Okay.
Our first one is actually in the Michigan Trust building, because a skyscraper just basically indicates that it's gone over 10 stories.
Okay.
Or it is 10 stories.
Right.
Anything higher. But the thing with the Select Bank building is there's a couple of stories, one with a human fly who was making, before the building actually opened in 1915, that he was making tours around the country climbing tall buildings.
Okay.
Without a net or anything.
Oh.
And there's some great stories on the Grand Rapids History website, the Historical Commission website.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a great story on there about that.
Mm-hmm.
But something that's a little unknown about that building, which is, I just stumbled upon it one day, was that Harry Houdini actually did his first high-rise escape from the ninth floor of that building.
No kidding.
And from a straitjacket, he was rigged at the ninth floor, pulled up to the fifth floor, and over a crowd of about 10,000 people.
Wow.
At that corner there on was Monroe and, is that Ionia there?
Yeah.
He then proceeded to escape in, I think, less than a minute or so.
I wonder if there's any pictures of that around.
Well, there is a really bad shot in a newspaper, but maybe, you know, something will surface at some point.
Well, we are kind of touching on, you know, some unknown history or scandalous history, but are there any other scandalous bits of history or unknown history that you feel would pique folks' interest?
Well, I think the most scandalous one, and it comes up from time to time, is it goes back to the McKay Tower.
Yeah, I've heard some stuff on that. What are the details?
Well, I don't know all that much about it myself.
Okay.
But just that it's somehow tied in with Frank McKay, who purchased the building from the National City Bank in 1942.
Mm-hmm.
By 1945, while he had some dealings with the state, some state senators and that, he... I just don't know enough of the details, but there's his name is somehow associated with kind of a gangland hit murder of a state senator.
Okay.
And it's still somewhat of an unsolved mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And notorious even for the state of Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Not just Grand Rapids.
And maybe I'm wrong, but didn't somebody jump off a McKay Tower at some point back in the early 1900s? There was some, I don't know, scandal or something like that, but I thought I'd heard about.
I'm not sure about that, but because the tower was finished in 1926.
Okay.
So I don't know how much earlier it could.
Yeah, I thought maybe there was a piece that perhaps Sam Cummings wrote in Grand Rapids Magazine a few years ago that was talking about the history of that, and I know he touched on some of the stuff that you mentioned with Frank McKay, but I thought there were some other things that might have.
This is some good stuff that you bring up, because this is. That was one other little project I've kind of doing on the side is building history and building a architectural database of buildings first starting along Monroe Center.
Okay.
And documenting that and giving something to the library for future researchers.
Mm-hmm.
Just saving, you know, lots of time and researching the same thing over and over again.
Sure.
Be able to have a database.
Oh, I think that's an excellent idea.
I've seen so many mistakes on things out there.
Chris, any scandalous history you're aware of or unknown history that you think would pique folks' interest in the city?
Well, Tom Dilley tells the really good story of the pharmaceutical family where the family members kept journeying to New York to visit the daughter. And the physician husband was poisoning them one by one as they came out to visit. And do you remember the family name?
Trying to remember that one.
I'm sure you could Google it, but at the time it was like a huge national scandal.
Oh, that's bizarre.
When they figured it out, and they were, you know, complete with anonymous telegrams saying that you need to do an autopsy. And it turned out that the guy had stored up more poison than he needed to, you know, poison like half of New York. But, yeah, he was essentially, you know, probably killing off the family in order to get to the fortune.
Oh.
Because they were, you know, really wealthy business owners here. And that's always, that's a good one. There's a story that is in one of the history books, and it's around the Burton House, but in the winter, one of the really early years, there was kind of a snowstorm going on, and they could hear someone yelling. And so they blew trumpets and shot guns, but no one showed up. And then shortly thereafter, a horse showed up without a rider, and they kept the horse and searched for the rider, but they never found the rider. And then later that spring, they found the skeletal remains of someone, but they never identified who it was. But, you know, you go home to your safe neighborhood, and it's kind of crazy to imagine, you know, 200 years ago, someone was lost in the wilderness and you know, froze to death in the winter.
Huh.
I think it's either a Garfield story or a Belknap story, but it would be near the Burton House.
No, that's a fascinating story, though. This is Paul Jindrzejczyk for Sunday Morning Town Square, and we've been chatting with Jim Winslow and Christopher Reeder about Grand Rapids history. Thanks so much for joining me, guys.
Thank you.